From an ethics of rationing to an ethics of waste avoidance. That's the title of a perspective published by Dr. Howard Brody in the May 2nd, 2012 edition of the New England Journal of Medicine. Joining us now on the Bioethics Channel for their view of this perspective are John Carney, President and CEO of the Center for Practical Bioethics, and Terry Rozelle, the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center. John, let's start with you. In Dr. Brody's article, he states that, quote, ethical debate is now shifting from rationing to the avoidance of waste. This little-noticed shift has important policy implications, unquote. Do you agree with Dr. Brody in that regard?
I do. It refocuses, reframes the issue probably in a more, if you will, rational, not necessarily rationing, but rational approach to actually dealing with the problem. The issue of rationing, I think, is pejorative. It's just gets people on one side or the fence or the other very, you know, angry or upset about things. And I think everybody can agree that we need to do a better job of avoiding waste in the system, and we all know it's there.
Well, Terry, then, what's your view, overall view of the article by Dr. Brody?
I would take a slightly different perspective and say that the title of the article is unfortunate in that it sets up something that looks like an either-or. So the title is From an Ethics of Rationing to an Ethics of Waste Avoidance. And I don't think it is an either-or situation. And in fact, Dr. Brody doesn't either. Mm-hmm. He says towards the end of his article that in the end, the ethics of rationing and of waste avoidance are complementary, not competing. And so he, too, admits that this is not an either-or. We ought to engage in rationing, I believe, in under conditions of limited resources, and we ought to engage in waste avoidance.
So have we reached a consensus, then, that rationing is inevitable, John?
Well, rationing is already happening in the United States, whether we want to believe it or not, just by access to healthcare services. I mean, it's pretty well documented that, you know, close to 50,000 people a year die because they can't get access to care, and from avoidable, you know, incidents and trauma. So we've already dealing with this issue. I think Terry's perspective is right on. I mean, this is an issue that we need to talk about kind of in a spectrum from, you know, all the way almost circular. You know, there really is, there's always this going to be this question about the fact that how do we utilize the resources we have in an efficient way for the greatest number of people and making sure that we tend to those who are most vulnerable in society. Those are fundamental ethical dilemmas that we've been facing for a long time, and unfortunately, we've not done a very good job of managing that.
So, Terry, inevitably we will have rationing then, right?
Inevitably we have rationing as long as we have any limited resource. If there's not enough to go around for everyone or for everyone to have as much as they want or even need, then we have rationing. That's what happens. What John is referring to in terms of the almost 50 million people who've slipped through the cracks of healthcare insurance, I don't think that's rationing. That's just injustice. That's disparity of resources and allocation of them. Whereas rationing is a positive word. When you have, or could be, if you have a certain amount of resource, you make a decision, someone makes a decision as to how we will distribute the resource, and to do so then fairly, justly.
And I would agree theoretically with what Terry says. I think that the problem is in the American vernacular, the term has taken on a negative connotation, and mainly because even for those of us that are old enough to, or our parents to remember the Second World War, that it was seen as a negative, that rationing was giving up something, sacrificing something, which in my estimation is not a bad way.
Sure. It's the R word.
Yes, it's the R word. And it was characterized that in the article.
I'm envisioning throwing rationing into a political venue right now, and it would not be received very well.
That is correct.
Because we don't like to face up to reality.
Right. Well, in a political arena, we can have another podcast on whether or not that actually takes place there. Now, John, it appears that Dr. Brody is trying to argue about the definition that of waste in healthcare is changing from one focused on fraud and abuse to spending healthcare resources on things like diagnostic tests and procedures that don't benefit patients. Do you feel there's any kind of consensus around that issue?
Well, we know that we run way too many tests, and we run the same tests over and over again for the convenience of the fact that you go to one doctor and then you go to another doctor. That's pretty well documented in the literature, that we can do a better job of that. And I think there's this panacea that we think that the electronic medical record is going to solve all that for us because it's going to be stored in the cloud and we'll be able to bring it down. And there may be some benefit to that, hopefully some benefit to that, so we do a better job. But those efficiencies are going to hopefully be addressed by the fact that we just do a better job of keeping track. But in many, many cases, especially with those at the end of life, which is really kind of where I've spent my life and work, there's overwhelming evidence that we do way too many tests on people, even when we don't have any reason. We're not going to do anything with the results. We're just doing it to assuage our own conscience or know that the fact that the progression of the illness is going the way that we do. And we really do not talk about that with families and with patients, about the burdens that they experience in that. And that literature is growing, especially for those facing the end of life, that we just need to put a halt to it. And I think he even mentions a couple of new efforts that are emerging in terms of making sure that doctors ask the right questions and make sure that you don't order a test unless you know you're going to do something with the results.
Terry, it seems like this is moving in the direction of medical decision making, and you're in the front lines, in the trenches, so to speak, in your role at the Bioethics Center as a consultant on ethical issues. Do you find that these are the types of conversations that are taking place at the bedside and in trying to define what is useful healthcare, what is wasteful?
I don't know if it happens at the bedside. It happens in the conference room when providers are sitting together and talking about specific cases in context of all of their patients, but even more so when they are cognizant of all of the other patients in the hospital or in the health system or in the nation or the world. And there is some level of that too. One of the questions that has to be raised is who is responsible to make those decisions? And we have been hesitant to have physicians make those decisions at the bedside. We have wanted and still want doctors to focus on this patient, their patient, and to prescribe, to do what is best for this patient, regardless of cost and limitation of resources. But if we do that, and if doctors do that, then someone has to be asking the other question. Someone has to be responsible to look at this patient in the context of other patients and of the entire resource available. Who does that then? Could we still maintain that division of doctors focused on their patient and aim to do what is best for this patient, and then leave the other decision for administrators, for policymakers? That's pretty much how it is. Does it work well? I don't know. But that's pretty much how it is, and maybe it's how it ought to be.
But in many cases, the ordering of a test and the campaign the Choosing Wisely campaign, which is really about making sure that you don't order something just because it's on the battery of things that can be done, or they're not standing orders, that we're actually going through this question about this patient in front of me, right now that I'm caring for, what can they benefit from? And when the question comes from a family member about, well, why wouldn't we do an MRI, the answer may be because that's not a wise choice to make here. We don't need that to be done here. What we need is this. And so I do think
wise for whom?
The clinician, in terms of being able to make a good choice for the care of the patient.
So then are you focused on the patient's good? Is it wise for the patient, or is it wise relative to the costs? I'm not sure what you mean.
I think it's relative to the patient. That the choice that needs to be made, the wise choice, is about in this condition with this patient for this procedure, whatever it is we're looking at, is what is necessary. And the clinical understanding and the scope and breadth and depth of the problem is really the clinicians to assess, not the families. The family may ask about a particular test or procedure, but it is not they do not have the understanding, and they may want to understand better, but it's still the clinician. The power relationship is on the physicians. The burden is on the physician's side.
And in my experience, that does happen with focus on the patient's good. And then in the context of that discussion, I or someone, perhaps a financial consultant in the multidisciplinary team that's meeting, may raise the question or the statement of cost. That, by the way, if this chemotherapy option is prescribed, it's $25,000 a shot, and it has to be done twice a month. By the way. And then there will be a pause in the room.
Eventually, sure.
And raised eyebrows. The clinicians don't necessarily know that.
Right.
But then the focus, again, in my experience, limited as it is, will be will it benefit the patient and what percentage chance? But even more than that, are there resources to pay for it, or will this harm the patient and family financially? So harms are taken into consideration, but again, with the notion of we don't want to harm the patient in the process of trying to do them good.
Right.
And financial harms count.
But they do. And burden and benefit count. And burden and benefit in the assessment of the patient as
what,
well.
What doesn't get taken into consideration so much that somebody has to think about is, so if this is deemed to benefit the patient and it won't harm them and their family financially because insurance will cover it, or Medicare or Medicaid, public or private insurance will cover it, then will it have harms to other patients, other insured persons from whom who also have to dip into that pot that isn't bottomless?
Well, what about, Terry, Dr. Brody suggesting that medical futility, that phrase, becomes entangled with the question of waste avoidance, that futile care is delivered not only at the demands of patients and their families, but also by physicians who bring their own professional baggage to the question. Maybe this is what they've always done. This is how they've always done it. Maybe they have a financial incentive to do a procedure, an MRI, or something of that nature. Does that ever enter into the picture in your mind?
Right, but I would consider those different things. Medical futility as looking more, assessing more whether it will have benefit or not, and whether it's worth it or not in the larger sense, either in terms of enduring the harms that are a part of the treatment, or the harms or costs relative to the finances as well. Whereas the other part of it, will somebody be making money off of this? I don't think that's a medical futility
question per se.
Question so much. It's another question. It has to do with ethics as well.
Sure. Well, what about wrapping it up here? Dr. Brody states at the end, and you quoted it, Terry, that in the end, the ethics of rationing and of waste avoidance are complementary, not competing. Perhaps at present, waste avoidance could save enough money to permit both universal coverage and future cost control as medical technology advances, especially with personalized genomic medicine. We will almost certainly arrive at the day when we cannot afford all potentially beneficial therapies for everyone, unquote. And I think that's when the debate will really begin, won't it, John?
Well, we're at it now. I would rather have us start talking about efficiencies and effectiveness of treatments more so than the avoidance of the bad things. Maybe those are more apparent, and maybe that's lower hanging fruit, and it's easier to deal with. But we have the capacity in our healthcare system to study whatever we want to study and find out what we want to find out. We just have to invest in this. And I think that the movement away from this get everything you want anytime you want it to recognizing that there is this limitation of resources and that we need to do a better job gets us to focus on, I think, the more positive side of things about what is the best way to care for this patient and what is the better way for us to spend our resources in order for us to accomplish the goal that hopefully we've been able to establish here, and that we're not wasting our time doing things that aren't going to lead us to that goal or basically divert us from being able to do that. So I would rather focus on the positive aspects of efficiencies and effectiveness more so than kind of the avoidance of waste, which and we got a lot of low-hanging fruit that we can you know harvest before we have to worry about the more difficult questions.
I'm glad you said that. We were talking about this earlier, and you made that point that the focus is really elsewhere. So my number one point on the notes that I was jotting down reading the article and thinking about this conversation is, number one, the end or the goal of healthcare is not saving, much less making money or lives either. The goal, the end of healthcare is what Ira Byock in his recent book called the best care possible. Mm-hmm. So there's the focus. But in order to have the best care possible for this patient and all patients, under conditions of limited or finite resources, which is the case of everything, including clean water, then two sides of the same coin are, on the one hand, waste avoidance, and on the other hand, rationing the resources that we have. And that when we do that with what the Greeks called sophrosune, or practical wisdom, then we do enable the best care possible. So my sketch here, if you could bring your camera up a little closer here, Laurel.
That's beyond this technology, my friend.
the concept that I'm sketching out here is that the whole point of this is the best care possible under conditions of limited resources. And two sides of this that are complementary, not competing, are waste avoidance on the one hand, rationing on the other, and that there are principles that go along with each. The principle of prudence in regard to waste avoidance, and the principle of justice in regard to rationing, frugality as a virtue on the one hand, and therefore leading to waste avoidance, and liberality as a virtue on the other hand, so that we try to distribute as much as we can, but under conditions of limited finite resources. And how do you balance those? Well, there's a lot written about that in the Greek philosophy texts.
And I think it's probably worthy of about 10 more podcasts. But for now, we're going to have to bring this one to a close. John Carney is president and CEO of the Center for Practical Bioethics. Terry Rozelle is the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics. I'm Laurel LeBou. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.